Hi, and welcome to the second audio clip on what we call the second look. My name is Carola Mantel, and this time I would like to say a few words about the question how the difference can be described between the so-called first sight and the so-called second look. And the interesting thing about this is that we all have an answer to that question. I think we all know how it feels in everyday life when we're stressed or irritated about something, and then we pause for a moment and think about it again, or we talk to someone about it and gain a new perspective. And I think we all know this in one form or another. At the same time, this second look is something you don't find once and then it stays like that forever. Rather, it is characterized by the fact that it always remains exciting. It is always a journey of discovery. It can expand, it can deepen, it can become more natural. And I think it has a very high significance in educational contexts and in the professionalization of us teachers. And I'd like to talk about all this. We put together a table which has now been uploaded or inserted in many places, and we can also make it available at any time. And the table is called Where You're Looking From, and this table contains a column on the left which shows the perspective at first sight and the column on the right which shows the perspective on second look. And we've put together a collection of statements and behaviors that are somehow typical for the first or the second look. And this collection was created primarily with regard to the context of diversity and social inequalities, which refers to transnational conditions in educational institutions or in international contexts in various forms. So the collection is just as relevant whether I am currently on a stay for study abroad in Switzerland or in an internship abroad elsewhere or traveling somewhere or just on a normal day at school or in daily life. The international dimension, or rather the transnational dimension of our lives, can be found everywhere. When I travel somewhere, but also in everyday life around me, also very close, perhaps in my own family history, maybe even in my own history in various forms and in the facets of identity that we all have. So this transnational perspective is the focus of the table and its context. And the transnational way of looking at things is the perspective that does not refer to the national borders, but to the interconnectedness of our lives beyond these border constructions. And when I think about these transnational dimensions and I observe our daily lives, I'm often struck by how omnipresent they actually are, how interconnected we all are. And you could think that this makes us not only interconnected but also connected, but at the same time it is also true that some forms of international are considered superior and others rather inferior. There's a little story that was told by the researcher Elma Falani about a teacher. He said that the teacher suggested to his class to use a different term for the students with the so-called migration background, because migration background is increasingly charged as something negative. And he said, why don't we say that these students with a migration background, they're actually students with international experience? But then the other students in the class didn't really like the idea because they said, the other ones without an international family background, they said they felt that this would devalue them. And, you know, the story shows it so clearly. The question immediately arises as to what is more valuable, or let's say, above all, who is more valuable. And so often, these inherent judgments are engraved in our everyday discourses. Often I think we're not even aware of them, and often we reproduce them without even realizing it. So these are the questions that we're dealing with here, but the second look is also relevant beyond these questions for the professionalization as teachers in general, I would say. So when we are experiencing something at first sight, there are some typical ways of thinking. I personally, I can easily find myself having these kind of thoughts, and when I become aware of them, that's really helpful. For example, it's really typical to have spontaneous ideas about that's right or that's wrong. For example, when it comes to ways of parenting or ways how children should be treated, and you observe something, and you know, when this happens to me, I usually think in terms of that's right, that's wrong, but also the way I think is right is right. So, you know, there's a strong and quick judgment, and that's exactly what is so typical of the first impressions. We often judge before we even realize it. And something that is often also part of this idea is an idea of they should learn. Or in the transnational context, often there's a thought of they should not live the way they do, etc. So what can emerge on second look are statements and ways of thinking such as, what can I learn from this? Or, at first I thought and now I see. Or, things are sometimes different than they seem. And also, I'm reluctant to judge. There's so much I don't actually know. And also, who am I to judge? You know? So I always find it impressive that it feels different. Even now when I talk about it, it feels really good. Not having to judge, not having to know everything, being allowed to be a learner, to have questions that cannot be answered or that I cannot answer. And it's a relief. Instead, I can just enjoy curiosity. I can be interested. I can enjoy listening, getting to know people and wanting to understand them better. And sometimes I also realize, oh yes, actually this quick reaction I had has something to do with my own conditioning. Maybe I can even find out something about myself, something that I wasn't even aware of before. Something that I find particularly fascinating is when people come up with new solutions on second look, some creative new way of looking at something. At, you know, at first sight, we tend to focus on restoring some kind of order or habit. But on second look, we seem to be much more flexible and creative. Recently, somebody told me about a conflict that she needed to resolve. And at first sight, and that's quite typical, she only saw either or. Either you or me, one wins, one gives in, two options, but both are somehow unsatisfactory. And then on second look, there was some kind of creative process. And they said, she and her colleague, hey, we could also actually do it that way. And they found a completely different new solution, which they hadn't even thought of at first sight. So the first sight is often an either or way of thinking, either this or that, either you or me, either you are right or I'm right. But the second look seems to offer new possibilities. There's no longer so much either or thinking, and instead much more thinking in terms of both and. And it's true, there's often much more space than we initially think. And on second look, we are much better able to recognize ambivalence and this both and thinking and ambivalence. At first sight, we often want to resolve things with a black and white template, and on second look, we're much better able to acknowledge ambivalence for just what it is. To come back to the transnational dimensions which shape our lives, we sometimes find ourselves wanting to put each other in a box. You know, create order. That's typical for the first sight. And at first sight, there could be a question like, and that's typical as well. So, you know, what are you now? Are you a Swiss or are you Italian? Because maybe you live in Switzerland, but there is an Italian family, whatever history. or the question, so are you Polish or are you German? What are you? But this question is not very appropriate, and it's also too simplistic. And you could say, anyway, what do you mean? Are you this or that? If I say I'm Italian, does that mean I don't really belong anymore? What do you actually want to tell me? Do I have to justify being here? So this question that seems so harmless isn't actually harmless at all. And our identities are often so much more complex. We often have multiple identities, multiple facets in our identities, and they can relate to many different areas of life other than national affiliations, and they can also change, they can depend on situations, etc. And we all want to belong. We don't want to be questioned in our belonging. And justify that we are from there or from here means we need to justify our belonging. And, you know, we can recognize all this complexity and the multiplicity of identity facets so much more easily on second look. At first sight, it seems more difficult, but on second look, we can recognize it and see the reality as it is and recognize the complexity of it and also be aware of how we hurt people when we put them into boxes. What we've also added to the list in the table is a note that we found to be really relevant. At first sight can also mean wanting to avoid conflict. The first sight can also mean an inappropriate way of dealing with conflicts, for instance, by avoiding it. In any case, the first sight does not seem to be a particularly good ground when it comes to facing a conflict, addressing something that needs to be addressed, listen to each other, negotiating something, and all that. All of this is much easier on second look. In our latest research, we came across a topic that I didn't really expect, but the more I think about it, the more it makes a lot of sense. We have seen that teachers who have gotten into the habit of often taking a second look feel significantly less stressed than others. And a similar finding was recently reported in a really great study at the University of Constance by Sonia Lorusso and her team, published in 2024. The title of the publication is What You Think Is What You Feel. And they show that there is a connection between interpreting situations based on stereotypes and the degree of emotional stress or emotional exhaustion. And that's really interesting, because that means if we use a lot of stereotypes in our interpretations, we are not doing ourselves any favors in terms of our stress levels. And this is something that our research has shown as well, but it wasn't only the way of thinking, it was that the teachers who were more in the mode of the second look simply find better solutions in daily life. And we could say there is more flow maybe in their being a teacher, in their daily life as a teacher. At the very end of the table at the bottom, we tried to formulate something that could be something like a basic perspective describing the difference between the first sight and the second look. And we found something that I think fits quite well, especially in this context of social inequalities and transnationality. And this is the difference between fear and trust. At first sight, some form of fear is often at play. And on second look, something else can come into the picture that has more to do with trust. And I don't mean a naive, blind trust in the sense of anything goes and everyone is nice and all this. No, that's not what we mean. Rather, what is meant here is this kind of a healthy, basic trust, a trust in oneself, a trust in the perspective of the other person, in the processes, and also in the possibilities of learning together, etc. Yes, so these are some thoughts about this table, and I'm convinced that in daily life we're sometimes in the mode of first sight and sometimes of second look, and we can always ask ourselves, where am I at the moment? Where am I looking from? And if we can notice that, that's great. A teacher once said to me that for her the difference was crystal clear. She can easily tell, and that was really interesting. She said, you know, when I take the situation very personally, I know that's first sight. And when I don't take the situation so personally anymore, then I know I'm in second look. And I found that really interesting as an observation. But noticing is one thing and shifting is another. So how do you get there when you need it? How do you switch from the first or shift from the first to the second look? I believe and I observe that we all have our own favorite strategies of for how we do that. Some people say that it's just a matter of really pausing in some way, just pausing, maybe really consciously taking a deep breath. And also exhaling really slowly. That's really good. Or I've heard people say, go and open the window, move away from the situation and come back to it afterwards. Or sit in a chair but change my body posture very consciously and see whether this shifts something. This is a field of experimentation, and I'm always amazed at all the good ideas and strategies that people have. And it's very good to find something that works for you. Sometimes shifting is something that can be done in a few minutes, but sometimes things take more time. For instance, sleeping over it. I think this is very old wisdom, but it's really good advice. Or take time and talk to someone you trust. But I would say it would be good to choose someone who has a little bit of wisdom to offer, because that can also go wrong. If the other person is in the mode of the first sight, then this is probably less helpful. And I believe that there are also things that need much more time, maybe weeks, maybe months. And sometimes it takes a third look, so that this space can emerge between the stimulus and the response to the stimulus. Viktor Frankl, the well-known neurologist, said, there is a space between stimulus and response. In that space lies our power to choose our response. That's such a beautiful quote. And speaking of quotes and authors, perhaps all this reminds you of the theories of Daniel Kahneman, if you know him, this famous psychologist who called his book Thinking Fast and Slow. And yes, his descriptions correspond really well with what we are describing here. For example, the fact that fast, spontaneous thinking often contains a bias, and that slow thinking offers so many new opportunities to correct this bias. At the same time, I believe that it is important to discover this difference for yourself, not just cognitively, but to really experience it and experiment with shifting from the first to the second look and really pay attention to the whole body in this process. There's another interesting theory, maybe you've heard of it, the one by Carol Dweck, who is also a well-known psychologist and who distinguishes between a fixed mindset and a growth mindset, which I find really interesting and exciting and a wonderful invitation to cultivate flexibility in thinking, to break away from this fixed mindset and move towards a growth mindset. And also to believe that you can have this flexibility, and to believe that your students can have this flexibility as well, and to experience this joy of learning together at school. I think this is what she's talking about very often, the growth, the potential and the joy of having a growth mindset. I would also resonate with this, and I would also emphasize that we oscillate, that we don't arrive at one place and then we stay there. So either this mindset or that mindset. I think we are sometimes here and sometimes there, sometimes at first sight and sometimes on second look, which is a different mindset. And this depends on, you know, what is going on at the time and how it affects us. Of course, consciously switching to a second look can become a habit, and then it gets easier and easier. And actually, all these things are about something that is really important, because what I'm referring to here with the first and the second look is actually what can be seen as the core of professionalization in the teaching profession. This question whether as a teacher I only focus on my own perspective, which would be the first sight, or whether I take the step and I can perceive the other perspectives and incorporate them. That is the difference between a not yet professionalized and a professionalized teacher. And this can be read very clearly in the writings of Werner Helsper. A professional teacher is able to decentralize their own perspective. And they also know, and this is the other thing that Werner Helsper is emphasizing, and I'm emphasizing as well, these teachers, the professionalized teachers, they know that they do not know everything. They do not need to know everything. And this is really a second key aspect that describes this difference. A less professional teacher prefers to rely on the knowledge that they already have. And that's understandable because it provides a degree of security. But a professional teacher has realized that it's great to be on a constant journey of discovery. What I don't know is what I can discover, where I can learn something new, where it's exciting. And then when I have this attitude, I can also show this attitude to my own students and show them how exciting learning can be. Teachers who are on this path to professionalization and who keep finding this second look are well placed to teach this second look to their students. And finally, I would also like to point out that the second look can, of course, be full of blind spots. You know, thinking of my own journey and looking back at all the blind spots I've discovered, I probably still have quite a few which I cannot see because they're blind spots. But with the flexibility that the second look brings, I will probably be very interested to identify these blind spots, especially topics related to social inequality, racism, discrimination, stereotypes, unequal educational opportunities. These topics are full of thinking habits, and they require us to constantly search for them and find out how we can address them. Many say that it helps them a lot and it supports the quality of the second look when they read good books or listen to good podcasts on these topics. Sometimes it's also really important to reflect on your own experiences, your own biographical personal experiences, in order to better understand how you yourself are entangled in all these issues of inequality, perhaps from a more privileged position or from a less privileged position. And perhaps the position is also quite different depending on the role you have in the particular social constellation that you find yourself in that moment. Yeah, so before I go, I would like to read a little poem by David White, whom I mentioned before, and the poem goes like this. One of the great invitations of life is to get over yourself, get over your initial reactions, get over your lack of generosity, get over your narrowness, and risk yourself in the world. So with these words from a wise person, I come to a close, and I wish you all happy experimenting and all the best.